Beautiful city of Antwerp in the country of Belgium. We are here for Techorama 2017. I have a special guest with me, Charlotte Yarkoni. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. So you're new to Microsoft. Tell us about what you do.
So I head up a new function, if you will, within Scott Guthrie's organization called Growth in Ecosystems.
Okay.
And it really is a simple message and mission that we have, which is first and foremost, how do we accelerate our growth and adoption of all our next generation products and services, primarily starting with the cloud, building around that? And then once people actually get engaged with us on Azure and the Azure services, how do we make sure that they're so super successful that they continue to grow with us?
I see. So what do events like Techorama, why are these kind of events important? Why are you here? Why? Because Scott Guthrie was here giving the keynote. Why are these kind of events important for growth and ecosystem?
Well, look, I think growth always starts with the developers who are actually bringing the new technologies, bringing the new workloads into the market, and as well as developers that are responsible for supporting the main workloads and main work streams that exist for the large enterprises out there today. So from our perspective, these events are absolutely critical. Why Scott is here and why I'm here is kind of following Scott around, learning what he does and learning the ropes. But it does start with every developer in every local ecosystem is important to Microsoft. It's important to Scott. And therefore, it's important to spend time with him. You know, I think we're coming off of a great build experience where we had a tremendous amount of new products and services that we launched. We also actually delivered a lot of messages that, quite frankly, created a connective tissue between the 500 million, Windows devices that we have and the 100 million Office 365 active users, monthly active users, and the 140 million Active Directory users. And how do those workloads actually interact with our own cloud products and services? What are some of the new features coming out around AI? And what's that broader picture of value that we can offer to the market? So, Scott came today and he kind of kicked off the session, sort of re-emphasizing some of the highlights of Build, everything from, our Xamarin Live player to also talking about Cosmos DB, which I was super excited.
Yeah.
I get excited every time we talk about that, to a lot of the other ease of use that we've done in and around our products and services. So
before we get into some of the stuff that you're working on, there's some really awesome things from Docs to Evangelism to other things. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? Because I want people to know, like, you have a really awesome background and technical work that you've done. Why don't you tell us about that?
So, look, I've actually had the privilege and the pleasure to work in a variety of industries and in a variety of different roles. But they're all kind of based around the fact that they're in the tech sector.
Right.
And so I originally started out as an engineer by pedigree, and that's how I started my career. And over the years, I kind of worked into areas of management, running P&Ls, things of this nature. For the last 10 years or so, I've really kind of been focused on what I think is a personal passion of mine, which is helping with companies that are looking at large areas of disruption or large areas where there's an emerging technology or trend coming their way, that they've got to kind of go transform their business.
Right.
And so prior to my role at Microsoft, I actually worked for Telstra, which is a telecommunications company based out of Australia. And I ran the Telstra Software Group, which was focused on a broad variety of investments around their fundamental mission of how do they go transform primarily a fixed asset network-based business model into a set of next-generation, connectivity services that were more software and cloud-based over the next 5 to 7 years. Prior to that, I actually worked at VMware. I was SVP of their cloud services group. And one of the things I'm most proud of is I had the team that built and delivered Cloud Foundry.
Oh, cool.
Which was the industry's first open-source platform as a service. I also worked at EMC, which was a majority owner of VMware at the time, where we had a variety of different cloud businesses that we ran to. Everything from we acquired a company, for example, called Mozy.
The backup company.
That's right. That was originally focused on online consumer backup, and this is at a time and a place where, AWS was still predominantly an online book retailer. but it started this new business model around selling infrastructure in a cloud model. And so, you know, working with companies like Mozy and understanding how you extended some of those technology capabilities, what that business model would actually entail to go into an SMB and ultimately an enterprise space, was a lot of where I spent my time as well.
So it seems like you've had a lot of experience in this sort of transformative sort of move to the cloud. Tell us how the cloud is changing the way enterprises do business, or just regular developers, because I feel like we're at this crossroads of like, we now, the cloud is something that we have to use, something that people need to look at. How do people begin that transformation? You've had a lot of experience there.
Well, a couple different questions there. First off, I think, how has cloud kind of changed how we all look at the world? You know, I think the most interesting thing is when the business model kind of got curated enough that it was very clear you could actually go purchase and consume IT resources by the drip, it opened up just an ease of use in terms of, you know, citizen developers
right.
out there wanting to go build stuff on their own, startups who, you know, previously had to raise a lot more capital to go build their own test and development environments, eventually production environments. Same thing is true for enterprises, though. The ability to actually bring new capabilities into your business and do it with the speed and efficiency and cost that was better than the old model has been really kind of the first inflection point of the wave. I think the second and probably less talked about but important behavioral aspect around the cloud is, you know, as you think through how people are consuming the cloud, there really aren't these segregated communities anymore. There aren't just developers
uh-huh.
that are, you know, developers in the wild that are separate and distinct from enterprise developers, that are separate and distinct from SaaS vendors or ISVs or SIs or partners. So in all ways, you know, again, when you make the ability to actually create cloud infrastructure, cloud platform, cloud SaaS apps that you can consume anywhere, you actually kind of cross-pollinate between all these communities.
Right.
And so one of the amazing and incredible things about the cloud journey has been you could be a citizen developer on your own time, get your own account on Azure, you know, tinker around with whatever you want to tinker around with. You then go to your day job working for a company. That company decides they actually need to stand up a new workflow for their business, a new set of applications, a new set of capabilities. You could actually take the skills you learned on your own time
right.
and on your own dollar in Azure, apply those to the enterprise. You know, that enterprise could potentially build a new application that is not necessarily something that is only restricted to them. They could build something that's necessary and relative for the other peers in their industry, where they could actually all of a sudden become an ISV, where
right.
they're actually, you know, selling that application to other industry providers similar to them that need those capabilities. And so you find the lines get very blurred between using the cloud and what community you traditionally represented, which I think opens up a ton of opportunity for all of us, not just for those of us bringing products and solutions to the market, but everybody who's kind of going through their own digital transformation, regardless of where they sit in the world, and how they can take leverageability from the other parts of the community, right?
So I love the way you took it from, because my question was about the enterprise, but you said, well, it's about the developer.
It's always about the developer.
That does something that tinkers and then moves that into the enterprise. What are some things that decision makers at the business level, what can they do to foster that sort of behavior in their developers?
You know, there's a broader, more philosophical discussion around innovation and adoption. And the more mature you are, whether you're, you know, just talking about you and me as we get older in life
yeah.
versus a 10-year-old or a 15-year-old or a 20-year-old and how we look at the world, I think innovation is always a challenging thing for us to think about, particularly as we mature, our businesses mature, our products mature, they become more mainstream, you build a critical mass around them. How do you constantly keep, you know, thinking about the next thing
right.
down the pike? And again, I think cloud has been incredibly instrumental on this, because running a cloud stack as we do at Azure, you know, we're inherently responsible for all the availability aspects, all the security aspects, patching, constantly launching new features, and doing it in a way that we're offering it as part of the core service that you're providing, where you don't actually have to go do something. You know, you don't have to stop your business, create a window by which we can actually roll these new features and updates to you. So I think as you think about the cloud and as you think about people continuing to consume more and more of the cloud, we've gotten pretty good at that at the infrastructure layer. I think, you know, the new products and services we're bringing out at the platform and SaaS layer, and how all those things can actually be more and more integrated, how more capability can be, you know, introduced over time in a more seamless way. Cloud actually enables us to do that.
Absolutely. So. One of the things that I was in Peru, and this gentleman told me about the cloud. He said that traditionally in Peru, you have to buy a server. It takes 6 months to get it on the boat over. Then it takes another 3 months to get it out of the place. Then you have to put it in a place that you cool. And then like a year later, you can start developing. The cloud has really changed that.
Absolutely.
To where now they can do stuff immediately. So for those that are in those kind of startup mentality, what do you have to say to startups that are interested in looking at cloud technologies? Why should they use Azure?
So I think it's hard to find a startup unless they're a hardware or perhaps a life sciences startup that doesn't use some component of the cloud today.
Of course.
I think it just is very amenable to their business model and low startup cost, if you will, because again, you're paying for what you use.
Right.
You're not having to prepay and build out a large capital investment. Why Azure for startups? Like, I actually think startups are hugely important to us. We spend a lot of time and care, whether it's through our Microsoft Accelerator program, through some of the relationships that we're building with VCs across the globe, not just in any one region, and actually looking at a lot of the Accelerator programs, particularly companies like Y Combinator, where we have a pretty close relationship with, where we can actually incent startups to come on and use Azure. What's super important for us is, one, to be part of that ecosystem so that we can continue to get educated on it. Because I think the value back to us is understanding what new workloads are coming out there, and specifically, what are the needs they have for a cloud provider that we can help accommodate. So for us, startups as a community represents the new workloads. Therefore, we're super focused on it, and we're incented as to how we can help actually, you know, make sure that you're being successful on Azure. I think today we've spent a lot of time, you know, making sure that we have competitive infrastructure and platform capabilities. It, as part of Build, we actually started talking about co-sell opportunities,
right,
where we're branching not just to platform, but also to a lot of the SaaS vendors who sit on our platform. And I think the biggest value that startups are going to see to us, I mean, I shared with you why we are interested in them, but I think the big benefit that startups have when they look at Azure is we can give you that go-to-market reach that, quite frankly, no other cloud provider can.
Right.
And we've been kind of under-messaging that for whatever reason. Again, I'm kind of new to Microsoft, so I can come in and say, hey, this is an amazing capability. And, you know, if we could actually give all these startups a leg up for a much broader go-to-market reach than they can do on their own accord, if we can find a way for them to scale out their value, particularly in the enterprise space where we have very deep and tenured reach, right? We should absolutely be doing that because it only creates value for the Microsoft customers in our ecosystem today, where we're helping bring new workloads to them. And I think in return, the startups can take huge advantage of that go-to-market reach and capabilities that we can offer them.
Awesome. So we talked about the developer, we talked about enterprise, we talked about startup. Now let's get into some of the work, daily work that you do to enable developers to grow. Because when I think of growth, I think of how are we helping developers grow with Azure. What are some things that you would tell developers to look at or to do in order to be successful on Azure?
So I think, first off, I think thinking about what is your value proposition, and this is irrespective of Azure or any other cloud provider, but I think, you know, startups often have to struggle with a walking a very fine line between being so laser focused that they get super focused on a value proposition before it's really proven, and it may or may not be the right thing that they should be focused on, to trying to be everything to everyone is
not a good thing either.
Yeah, we're there at a stage of immaturity that they can't afford to have that kind of dilution
right.
in terms of what they're trying to achieve. So I think first and foremost, being clear on what your value proposition is an important inherent aspect for any startup to have as they kind of begin on their journey. And then understanding what pieces do you need help with versus what pieces you're going to differentiate with.
Got it.
I think in the case of Azure, again, we're kind of uniquely positioned because we come with a set of productivity capabilities at the SaaS layer. You know, we have Windows, we have Office, we have LinkedIn, which create a tremendous pre-ready capability for you to kind of just set your company up and
right.
operate as a business. On down to, you know, how does our infrastructure work for you? Are you going to be global day one? You know, do you need things like 40 regions across mm-hmm. the globe ultimately? To platform capabilities, you know, who has a set of platform capabilities that allows you to, you know, most easily integrate with your infrastructure and with your the way you want to run your business
sure.
so that you're not actually spending all your cycles on that. You're spending your cycles on developing the secret sauce that is going to be your business and the differentiating value and IP and whatever it may be. That's where you really want to expend your energy. So I think, you know, again, understanding what that value prop is and then understanding where your cloud provider can help you. I would argue that Microsoft has the most coverage in terms of being able to focus in all the areas where you don't necessarily want to be focused, but you need somebody to help you get that done so that you can spend your limited resources and limited time and put all your sense of urgency is to the point of differentiation
That's
for your
awesome.
Business. Yeah.
So if you have any questions, make sure you can send them in using the hashtag Techorama. I'm watching that. And so if you have any questions, please make sure to get those in. One of the things that your organization works on, which for some reason it's like the last thing devs do, but it's probably the most important, is this thing called documentation. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the efforts and initiatives that you have in your organization regarding documentation?
Look, I have a huge passion around documentation, as does Scott. Mm-hmm. For anybody who's listened to him recently,
yeah.
he references it a lot. I think how you talk about your product and how you enable people, you know, to get to know your product online is the difference between writing really awesome code and putting it out there versus actually offering somebody a product.
Right.
So for me, documentation starts as the fundamental way, you know, I actually tell folks internally to Microsoft, if you have good documentation, that's kind of your table stakes for shipping a product. If you give me great code and it comes with crappy documentation, then you've given me code. You haven't given me a product.
Awesome.
And I do actually think that is a big part, you know, when I get back to sort of the pillars of my charter here, how do we accelerate our growth and adoption? It actually starts with making our products and services easier to use.
Of course.
So what does that mean? That means making sure that you give people, you know, online resources for them to be able to understand what your product does, how to implement it, how to run it, how to optimize it. That needs to be done in an online way. It needs to be done in a localized way since we are a global
sure.
company. And so really when I think about things like evangelism and how are our products serving the world, it is forums like documentation that kind of starts with there. That becomes your knowledge base. And really, it's your primary outreach today for a lot of communities, not just our existing Microsoft community, but particularly communities like open source that live in the online world,
right?
So,
and that's cool because I remember I was sitting with Scott and doing something, and he mentioned that, and he wasn't telling me, he was making a video about docs. He literally writes some of those docs, and he looks at them.
I got to tell you that my most active and most prominent PM on docs is Scott Guthrie, for sure. And he doesn't just look at them, he does author many of them. Every single piece of documentation, we're actually in the midst of going through this transformation on our side. We've started and we launched a lot of new collateral with Build to support our products and launches.
Sure.
But, you know, we created sort of this approach of startups have this thing called MVP, minimal viable product. Right. We actually created a framework around docs we call MVC, minimal viable content. And it was around how do we get a cleaner and more intuitive approach towards concepts, quick starts, tutorials. And rather than just, you know, being overly explicit about how you can create either a Windows or Linux VM, how do you actually go attach some storage? How do you go configure a CDN? Be able to get more scenario-based.
I see.
And again, that goes back to ease of use, right? So talking to somebody about how do you go build a web app on Azure and being able to put that entire flow in one place for anybody who's trying to stand up a web app is inherently more meaningful than making them go to 14 different places to figure out the components on their own that's
right.
needed. And so that's been a lot of the journey, and it's still a work in progress. We haven't scoured all of the documentation. This is, by the way, something we're doing just, it goes beyond Azure. Docs.microsoft.com is for the whole company.
Right.
And I would tell you, if you want to check out some of the things that we've done, we have a great quick and easy link for Azure. It's ms/AZEasy. Mm-hmm. That'll take you right to the Azure Get Started page. And I encourage everybody to check it out and give us feedback.
So Microsoft.com/AZEasy.
No, you just go to ms/AZEasy.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing.
Take you right there.
So we talked about docs. It feels like it's a monumental endeavor to document, because you said, I initially thought it was an Azure thing, but you said it's the entire company. I mean, what kind of effort is involved in making this right?
It's really, to me, more of a cultural effort. I mean, maintaining documentation is always a difficult task when you're a company as large as we are with as many products and services as we have to offer. But having quality documentation is something that you have to actually, you know, culturally put that as a value standard across your PM function, across your company.
Sure.
And so I think that's been the big change for us at Microsoft is in the last 12 months, we've made that shift. We're trying to be the tip of the spear with Azure and use that as our forum for how we can actually put together a more meaningful experience. But all of our efforts across the company and everything is centralized now on docs.microsoft.com. So you will start seeing a lot of great, you know, new content coming out on a continuous basis from Windows, Office, et cetera.
Awesome. And so for those that want to look at the docs, just docs.microsoft.com is
yep.
your entryway to everything. There's another effort that I think is involved inside of your organization called Developer Advocacy. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So developer advocacy is a brand new function for us. We actually, you know, have been in recruiting, silent recruiting mode for past couple months now, and we're still doing that. But I think that is really based around how do we reinvent evangelism? Because where the cloud ecosystem is today and how we think about how we can participate in cloud, as well as telling the broader Microsoft story between what are we doing in Office and Windows, how does, you know, HoloLens, AI, how is that actual landscape
sure.
look, which is very much connected to the cloud. There is a broader story to be told there. So I think from a breadth perspective, both within Microsoft and in terms of our outreach, you know, we are really trying to focus on first and foremost, how do we go get our message out there? And more importantly, do it in a way that's relevant for today. So developer advocacy is in addition to kind of upping the bar on our online resources, starting with docs.microsoft.com. Yeah, I'm pretty excited that Channel 9 is also under my remit today. So
that's right. We get to work with her. She's my boss.
That's right. I think we need to kind of also up our investment there. But developer advocacy is also about identifying the technical communities that you actually not just want to listen to or sometimes participate in,
right.
but you're trying to actually go actively engage with and offer thought leadership to. So we identified a set of technical communities, and it's everything from DevOps, obviously .NET, who's
right.
a big community for us, but open source is also there. So we look at things like Python. and Kubernetes and other areas that we really want to show leadership in. And we're you know, recruiting technology influencers and leaders in those communities today so that we can actually, one, get a better conduit to them,
right,
but also create more of that connected tissue back to those communities in our products and services moving forward.
I mean, that's pretty amazing that, I mean, like 5 years ago, we only have 5 minutes left, but 5 years ago or 10 years ago, if I would have said, we need to hire some people that know Linux, right, that would have been unheard of. How has the cloud changed the way we perceive software to the point now that we're actually hiring these kind of people?
Well, again, maybe it's my, you know, newness in the company. I actually think that you need to treat Linux and Windows both as open cloud, you know, first class citizens, right? Open source is important. Open source is not a strategy. It's a active community, and we need to treat it as such. That doesn't mean that we diminish .NET. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's always interesting when you have these kind of discussions and you think about, okay, so we need to support Linux and Windows. It's really easy to kind of say, all right, well, we're all going to go do just Linux now, or we're all going to go do just Windows now. They're both equally important.
Right.
I think that's been the big change, is recognizing that we have multiple first-class citizens in the cloud world, some of which are products, our own products and services, some of which are other people's. Our goal, though, is we want everybody's workload to be an optimal fit for Azure.
That's awesome.
So
just to finish up, because we have like probably 2 or 3 minutes, 4 minutes, what are some of the Azure functions or things that you've seen, because Azure Functions is a thing, but what are some technologies in Azure that you're most excited about that you think people should look at right now?
Look, I'm a huge fan of Cosmos DB.
Uh-huh.
That was one of our big announcements
at
Build, and I think we got a really positive reception from it. But this whole concept of data planetary scale, I think, is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd encourage people to look at that. You know, Scott did a talk about Xamarin this morning. Not restricted to that, but he did talk about it. And looking at things like the Xamarin Live Player and how you can actually test viability for mobile apps using that, I thought was super cool.
Right.
Jeez, we had actually so much stuff. Cloud Shell is pretty neat.
Right. One of the things that impressed me about Cosmos DB, as you're thinking about more stuff, is there is an SLA over latency. Like there's SLA over availability, and usually there's like the five nines, but there's one SLA that guarantees some kind of latency. Like, I don't know what the number is. Like, let's just say 100 milliseconds to return. Don't quote me on that. But literally there is an SLA over how fast we guarantee we're going to return data to
That's
you.
That's right.
Which is pretty, like, I've never seen an SLA like that before. It's probably one of the more impressive things for me.
It's an awesome product.
Yeah.
And then I think, you know, the only other thing I would call out is kind of Azure Stack. I actually think that's super important.
Right.
If you think about all the different scenarios, and look, hybrid's kind of an overused term.
Sure.
But when you think about how people need to run their business and what pieces of their business, for whatever reason, whether it's performance or connectivity or just who knows, they need to run in a local setting versus what can run in a cloud setting. Azure Stack is a really, really innovative capability around doing that, that I think is again, once people, you know, get a hold of it, they're going to find all sorts of new uses for that as well.
That's awesome. So just in the final 2 minutes, what should people go and do right now that are watching, that are developers? What is some advice you have for them to go and do in order to become successful?
I think a couple of general points of comments. Again, focus is super important. Know what you're trying to achieve and stay focused on that. I also think staying true to yourself is a big part of that journey, meaning you need to be able to listen and get feedback as you go along, but you also don't need to allow that to become too distracting.
Right.
So being able to have your own digestion of what's happening as you evolve your products and services and think about growing your business or your solutions. And then the final thing is, I think, be excited about all the change that's out there. It is It is just a wonderful time. And I know we keep saying this. I say it year after year after year, but this is, it's been true for me every year.
Yeah.
I think the amount of innovation and technology that's available to folks to actually go solve some of those problems that nobody else has solved yet, or solve it in a way that's better than anybody else, is super exciting.
Yeah, I mean, we're in an exciting time. Everyone has the ability to do some amazing computation. Like back in the day, I had to rent like server space to do my computations in school.
Yeah.
I had to like show up at 3 a.m. or whatever because I was like an undergrad kind of guy. But now you can rent the cloud at your leisure, which is pretty cool.
It is awesome.
Awesome.
Is
well, thanks so much for spending some time with us. Again, coming up next, we have a real awesome session by Dominic Baer, Identity Server, new and improved ASP.NET Core. So he is going to be here for that. Also, after his session, probably in a couple of hours after his session. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Identity is important. Thanks so much for watching. My name is Seth Juarez. We're in Antwerp, Belgium for Techorama 2017. We'll see you after this session.